Chapter 20. I Am Indeed Me. Brennus awoke suddenly, gasping in shock. He felt the throbbing beat of his heart in his chest, and his breath came raggedly. He threw off the bedclothes as he sat up and looked around the room. It was his bedroom, but moments ago, it had not been. He had just been in an alley behind a scrivener's shop. He was being chased by constables, city guardsmen, and was about to be apprehended. It was such a nice dream up until the end. He remembered everything, from the meeting with a nobleman client to the shared jug of wine by the seashore. He had even gotten another indulgence of his secret desire to work magic. He closed his eyes as he recalled the clean, fresh feeling of ether cascading through him and into those quills. Just the very last bit was fuzzy. It seemed safe enough to presume he had lost consciousness in the dream. He hoped that was all it was. It ended so suddenly, so unexpectedly, that he wondered if the man he was in his dreams had just been killed. The thought chilled him. He had been experiencing his dreams so vividly of late that it seemed much like a second life that he had resumed upon falling asleep. He could recite the names of dozens of people in a city he had never visited. He knew stupid little details of complete strangers' lives, from the guests at a nobleman's headsman's wedding to the going rate for spiced crescents made by a local baker. He had seen so much of this other life that he had grown attached to it, as if it were his own. Brennus was worried. Brennus dressed and made his way down to the dining hall for dawn feast. Worries about this Kairos fellow gnawing at him. The worst part of it was that it was such an odd thing to be worried about. He did not know to whom he could look for counsel.
"Father, there is a neophyte sorcerer in my dreams who has gotten himself in trouble. I do not know what has become of him and would like to lend him aid. What would you advise?"
"Well, that certainly would not pass muster." Brennus reached the main dining hall as much of the family had already finished their meal.
For all his abruptness in waking,
Brennus had overslept, and by some hours, it seemed. The productive members of the family had all departed for their daily business, leaving only his cousin Danil, short for Danilasis, and his grandfather, once high sorcerer of Cadran, but now too infirm to use his magic for anything but life extension.
"Uncle Brennus!"
Danil screamed when he saw Brennus enter the hall. Danil was of an age when he was looking for a guiding male presence in his life, closer to his own age than his father, and Brennus had been anointed. That small bundle of excess energy leaped from his chair at the dining table and sprinted headlong across the room to crush Brennus in a hug around the waist.
"Good morning, Danil,"
Brennus greeted him as he absorbed the impact.
"Have you been good while I was away?"
"Yeah,"
the boy replied, though Brennus suspected otherwise. Danil was 7 autumns old and a whirlwind of mischief. He was the youngest son of Brennus's uncle Caladrus and his aunt Felia, who were both rather too busy and important to look after him. Danil was left mostly to tutors and servants, and occasionally overseen by his grandfather, the latter being the likely cause of his free-spiritedness. While the tutors lacked the authority to truly punish the boy, seen as potentially a great sorcerer one day, his grandfather was both doting and growing in senility. What behaviors his grandfather did not outright allow were often permitted through neglect or obliviousness.
"Brennus, my boy," his grandfather said to him from across the room. "If that is you, then come here and let me have a look at you. Each day passing, I expect to be my last, and you have been away too long."
The ancient and infirm sorcerer's eyesight had deteriorated to the point where he rarely bothered with it anymore, preferring the indistinct view of the world through ether sight over the blurry view that normal vision offered. Ether sight used the eyes differently, though, and through it,
Axterion Solaran was able to manage despite his normal vision, having been nearly lost to cataracts. Rannis obliged the old man, walking the length of the fine polished oak table that took up most of the room. He knew that his grandfather's view of him in the ether was poor due to his own rather closed source. Axterion would have to make do with seeing his grandson in the light, if he wished to see him at all. "How have you been, grandfather? Has Danil been causing trouble?" he inquired. Axterion had always been kind to Brannis, even in his disgrace of failing out of the academy. Axterion was unable to work magic anymore, lest his failing health give out on him, so he could at least somewhat understand Brannis's plight, though he was coming at it from the other end, after a long and distinguished career of magic.
"Humph. That boy can cause no trouble. He can scarcely draw ether properly. His parents worry too much about him. He is a small boy, and in my experience, he is doing precisely what they are supposed to do." The old man chuckled at his own observation. "But Brannis, I hear there is trouble come to call. Your father and uncle both say that you brought back a demon with you, who claims to be Rashan."
"You hear truly. I met him in Kelvi Forest, on an assignment. We were fleeing from a battle and came across him living in the woods as a hermit," Brannis replied.
"None of that sounds like the Rashan I knew. You found him in the direction opposite the battle? Living in squalor, with no one around to command? No, not like him at all,"
Axterion mused, seemingly almost to himself.
"But Grandpa, what about that big boom when the floor shook?" Danil piped in. "I could see smoke from my window coming from the palace."
The boy might have been young and a rascal, but he was no fool.
"Indigestion, nothing more," Axterion replied, apparently not entirely grasping what the young boy had said.
"What boon, Danil?" Brannis asked.
"Just before you came down to Dawn Feast, you must have heard it," Danil insisted. "The whole floor shook, too."
"Sorry, but I was soundly asleep, I fear," Brannis told him. "No one has said what it was?"
"It was probably an invasion, with dragons and warlocks and ogres and forest spirits and wyverns and..."
"Enough, boy," Axterion snapped. He muttered something under his breath to the effect of, "Not raising a blathering idiot," then continued, "If that is a demon you brought back with you, Brannis, Rashan or no, I suspect that to be the cause."
Brannis's heart sank again. If Rashan, or whomever he turned out to be, was an enemy of Kadrin, Brannis might bear responsibility for whatever had just befallen at the palace. He was now unsure whether he was worse off in real life or in his dream life.
"I should go then and find out," Brannis said, then turned to leave. But his grandfather caught him by the arm. The old man's grip was feeble, but Brannis was too respectful and careful of his grandfather's health to pull free.
"Sit, eat. You may command soldiers, boy, but you are just a pawn here. The inner circle knows of your involvement, and if they wish to consult you on the matter, they will send for you." "Cook," Axterion called out. "Bring out more mutton and eggs. We have one more left for Dawn Feast."
Reluctantly, Brannis sat down. Axterion was still head of the family, though he exerted his privilege infrequently. Brannis had a lot of leeway to disobey, given that his advancement in the knighthood had little relation to the circle's politics. But he also knew that his grandfather was in the right. While he might offer some assistance to the inner circle, he would have to wait for them to call for it. Brannis tried to enjoy the mutton and eggs that the cook brought out, but was too preoccupied to appreciate them properly. On top of it, he had developed a headache. It felt as if something had hit him on the back of the head. The expected summons came an hour or so later.
Brannis had gone back to his room and dressed properly for a formal visit to the Tower of Contemplation, and buckled on Avalanche at his hip. To bide his time until the messenger arrived, he had been playing with Danil, something that few in the household had patience for. The messenger arrived on horseback, and had gotten the grooms of Solaran's stable to saddle one of their horses and ready it for Brannis. The message itself was curt, to the point of rudeness. "Your presence is required in the sanctum. Be quick about it." The messenger was clearly uneasy, though Brannis could get no details. When he pressed for answers along the way to the tower, the best answer he got was, "They shall explain it when you arrive." There were a number of guards at the gate when they arrived, far more than the token presence the Tower of Contemplation usually warranted. Upon entering the building, there were sorcerers milling about everywhere. It appeared that most of the circle who lived within Cadran were waiting in the entry hall of the tower. The messengers took the stairs, and Brannis followed, wondering if there was any particular reason they were taking the slower way up. All eyes turned to follow him as he walked up, keeping pace with the briskly ascending messenger. The messenger was short of breath by the time they gained the top landing. Brannis had gotten used to traveling in armor, however, and without it, he felt a bit lighter of foot, and not quite so quick to tire. Both men took a moment to gather themselves before approaching the sanctum. Brannis then followed the messenger up the short steps to the chamber itself. "Sir Brannis Solaran," the messenger announced him, then quickly withdrew. He brushed past Brannis on his way down the stairs, his eagerness to be elsewhere clearly apparent. Brannis walked up into the sanctum with some apprehension, which only heightened as he observed the daylight streaming in. His worry changed to confusion when he noticed that it was Rashan Solaran and not Gravis Archon, seated in the High Sorcerer's seat, directly opposite the entrance. Brannis entered the chamber and found Iridan there as well, along with his sister Aloysia, and a young sorcerer he did not know by name. "Good morning, Brannis," Rashan said. "As you can see, there have been changes made this morning. Now that all of you are here, I shall explain this just once. Gravis Archon is dead, by my hand, on the charge of treason against the Empire." As Rashan spoke, Brannis took quick stock of the inner circle. There were two empty chairs, not including the one that Rashan now occupied. "Yes, Brannis, I see you checking. Your father, Maruk Solaran, was complicit as well, as was Stalia Gardarus. Both are dead, also by my hand." Brannis stared at Rashan in shock. He hated his father, but in a way that many boys do. He resented and quarreled with him, and sought his approval for so long that he had given up trying to achieve it, though always secretly hoping he would find it regardless. He had not wanted his father dead, perhaps chastened, but never dead. "What had they done?" Aloysia asked, ever the practical one. She was tall and slender, as were most of the Solarans, and resembled Brannis enough that no one would doubt their relation. "There is no emperor," Rashan stated simply, and then paused, letting the reality of that brief sentence settle in. "Some 40 winters ago, Tamron II died of a sudden illness. His successor, Darus, was a young and sickly boy, and he died not long after. Rather than seek out the next closest in line for the throne, those dead today conspired to replace the imperial line with puppets of naught but ether, controlled by the sorcerers hand-picked by the High Sorcerer. While I know that others were most certainly aware of this arrangement," Rashan glared around the room at the remaining members of the Imperial Circle, "I will not further weaken the Empire by seeking out and executing everyone who knew about the plot. For those still breathing, there is a second chance. I am forgiving this transgression, but I shall not forget it entirely." "So what now?" Iridan asked quietly. Brannis noted that Iridan did not seem fearful of Rashan, but still seemed disturbed by the events that had taken place. "We will do what the Inner Circle should have done in the first place," Rashan said, We will search through the royal bloodlines and find the rightful heir and have a coronation. It will be a new dynasty, but it shall be a legitimate one. In the meantime, I will act as regent." Rashaan let that last part hang, awaiting a challenge, should anyone offer one.
"By what right would you rule if you just struck down Gravis for the same offense?" asked Dolvain, perhaps foolishly.
He was ever the righteous one among the council, claiming that he was not beholden to a bloodline family, and was thus more free to speak and act by his conscience. The others in the room collectively held their breaths, wondering if there soon would be a third empty seat in the sanctum. Rashaan glanced about the room and the reaction, frowning slightly. "Three today were killed for treason, and I have already said that those remaining were to be given a second chance. Whatever my reputation has become over the past century, I do not slay sorcerers of the Empire for asking questions. I have no more right to the position than Gravis Archon, that much I will grant. His treason, however, was not that he stood in regency over the Empire, but that he was complicit in supplanting the dynasty in the first place. Had the imperial royal family died during his tenure as High Sorcerer, it would have been fine for him to seek regency until the succession could be resolved," Rashaan said.
"And how do we fit in?" Brennus asked,
spreading his arms wide to indicate himself and the three sorcerers with him in the middle of the chamber.
"Well, Jurl is here just to act as herald. Many things will need to be explained and announced, and I was made to understand that Jurl has a rather excellent memory," Rashaan told him. "As for the rest of you, there are changes to be made. The Empire is in need of a bit of upheaval. I find that the warning we had given regarding the goblins in Kelvi Forest has gone largely unheeded. While the threat was acknowledged, the generals of the army seem to have decided that there are sufficient troops in the region, and any potential reinforcements would not make it so far in time to matter. They are leaving the western reaches of the Empire to their own resources. We have apparently been making a habit these past few decades of relinquishing lands we conquered as we are driven out of them. Megrin is free and sacking our outposts, and we've done nothing substantive about it. Brannis, I am putting you in charge of the Imperial Army. You have the mind for it, and I know you can be trusted. The latter cannot be underestimated, given that I may face challenges from within, should my largesse regarding amnesty be taken advantage of. This current crop of knights feels weak to me as well. I have heard little so far, but what little I hear is enough to turn my stomach. We have bred a generation of tower guards and called them knights. You fight to win. When we are finished here, Jurl will accompany you to the army headquarters, where you will relieve whoever is in charge these days."
"That would be Sir Harold Shedrison, Warlock," Caladrus added sullenly. His normal jovial demeanor was, quite reasonably, dampened by the recent death of his brother.
"Well, he will not be in charge much longer," Rashaan said. "Your first assignment, Brannis, will be to find where the goblins intend to invade and to drive them back. We will discuss this later and in greater detail. I've not fought a war in far too long, and I will not sit idly by for this one. As for you two," Rashaan gestured to Iridan and Aloysia, still standing roughly in the middle of the chamber, "we have two seats to fill here. Aloysia, you will take the seat that Stalia Gardarus once occupied. We will have someone from House Gardarus come to fetch her things later today, and you may have her offices as well." Aloysia looked stunned. She had long expected to one day ascend to the inner circle, but she had always thought it would be many long summers away.
"But I am not next in line," she said. "There are others with seniority who..."
"And they will continue to wait," Rashaan said. "Seniority is something of an issue for me. It bespeaks laziness and entitlement. Power was always supposed to matter, and competence as well."
Sitting comfortably in these throne-like seats in a tower as the Empire shrinks around you,
that is what leadership by seniority accomplishes. Aloysia, I hear nothing but good things about you, from what little time I have had to decide on a replacement. You are also kin, and I am not ashamed to admit to favoring House Solaran,
when there is little else to go by. Yes, Warlock, I accept the honor you are bestowing on me, Aloysia spoke, still seeming numb and dizzy with the heady realization that she had just been given one of the most powerful positions in the Empire. Lastly, you, Iridan. I must confess, I have done wrong by you. Roshan paused and swallowed as if unsure how to continue. You have struggled and fought against a system that favors the purest of the bloodlines. Brannis told me that you finished top rank your final 4 summers of the Academy and still garnered only token respect for it. You entered the Imperial Circle as a nobody, albeit a talented one. You were not arranged a wife, since a lone sorcerer in a peasant bloodline is just a fluke, not to be trusted until generations of sorcerers had proceeded from your line. How do you feel you've been treated by the Circle? Speak plainly now, Roshan commanded. Held back, Iridan answered, seemingly uncomfortable with saying so in front of so many that had been in charge of the system that had favored weaker sorcerers from better families over his. Like I would never be good enough because my parents are peasants. Do you think that traditional wisdom is wrong? That the blood does not tell? That talent may turn up unexpectedly, even in the most unlikely of places? Roshan asked one question after another, giving Iridan no time to answer in between. Yes, I think I do, Iridan answered proudly, lifting his head. Roshan was about to elevate him to the inner circle, Brannis realized, and Iridan seemed to want to end the talk that his pedigree was not good enough.
You are wrong, Roshan shouted.
Iridan's eyes widened in shock. It was surely not the response he was building up in his head. Iridan, you have the purest blood in this room, Roshan said. You are no more a fluke than I am. When you were born, I was not ready to return to Kadrin, but I wanted you to be raised in the Empire without revealing that I was still alive. You are my son, not the son of those kindly farm folk we left you with.
What? Iridan whispered. I... son?
Yes, Roshan said. I did not choose to follow your band of refugees from Kelvi Forest because of my distant relation to Brannis, or the fact that he carried Heaven's Cry and did not know it, though I admit that intrigued me as well. I followed you because I heard about your battle with the goblins and how you acquitted yourself. Roshan rambled, getting caught up in finally revealing his relation to Iridan. But I nearly killed myself, Iridan said. But you did not, Roshan countered. You took an instinctive step on the path to becoming a warlock. You used silent spellcasting in the furor of battle successfully. You have a natural talent. The rest is merely training.
Wait, what? Warlock? Me?
Iridan sputtered. Brannis could understand that Iridan felt overwhelmed, on two fronts no less. First, hearing that he was going to be elevated from 4th Circle directly to the Inner Circle, then being told that Roshan Solaran was his father. Now he was to be trained as a warlock as well?
I suppose I should have seen the resemblance, Brannis mused, feeling curiously detached from the proceedings. It was all too impossible to be real. His dreams actually felt more plausible than his own life, where he had just been the beneficiary of some sort of well-meaning reverse coup, where the usurpers had just been overthrown, and which had resulted in him being given an army. There is a hole in the side of the Tower of Contemplation. 3 members of the Inner Circle are dead, including my father. Roshan is Iridan's father? I am supposed to orchestrate the attack to drive back the goblin army. Oh, and apparently there has been no emperor in my lifetime. I would much like to wake up from this dream, too.
Brannis did not get to wake up from the strange world he was now being dragged into. Instead, he found himself at the center of a small parade, headed for the army headquarters. At the head of the procession was Jurl, who had transcribed Roshan's proclamation into a set of written orders, which the warlock had signed. 2 sorcerers walked next to him, his cousin Hernus Gardarus, and Iridan Solaran? Brennus mused. Surrounding the lot of them, to the sides and rear were a dozen of the tower's honor guards. The inclusion of Iridan, at his own request, no less, made Brennus a bit more comfortable. He was unsure of the reaction he was about to receive. Just the previous evening, he had been in Sir Harold Shadrician's office, taking the reprimand he knew he had coming for the loss of so many of his men. Now he was on his way to deliver orders, requiring Sir Harold to cede command to him. The general would be furious, to say the least. If Roshan had known the general, he might have sent more guards along. The trek across Cadrus to army headquarters on foot was long enough that word spread ahead of them. The streets were lining themselves with Cadran citizens, eager to begin putting the puzzle together of what had occurred that morning. Gossip was clearly raging already, and people shouted questions at them as they passed, occasionally calling out to the members of the procession by name if they recognized someone they knew. The guards were able to keep the curious at bay, a trick that being armed and accompanied by sorcerers made easier. But the press of onlookers blocking their path slowed them considerably, as the numbers in the streets swelled. They slowed to nearly a halt as the mob grew too large to get out of its own way, the ones nearest the procession being pushed forward by those far back trying to move closer. "People of Cadran," Jurl called out, "stand aside in the name of Warlock Roshan." This caused a buzz to go through the crowd as ale-room historians and quilting circle politicians circulated fresh gossip based on this newest revelation. Not one in four truly knew who Roshan was the night before, other than perhaps knowing the name from somewhere. By midday, all would have heard the news of his return and his history. The crowd was curious, but had not been especially spurred to react in any sort of path-clearing manner. The foremost rows directly in Brannis's path tried to edge sideways, but the constant press from behind would only allow for so much movement. From beside him, he heard Iridan chant, "Glenu, Chukchawe, Sivani, Mafalu, Anahio." Brennus turned to see what he was gesturing, but Iridan was quick. He finished before Brennus had a chance to see what he had just done. A clear, shimmering liquid spread beneath the feet of Brennus, Iridan, the other two sorcerers, and the guards. It formed a small pond under them all, and once it had everyone supported, it began to rise up from the cobblestones. The feeling was disconcerting initially, but the gooey liquid seemed sturdy enough, akin to standing in very wet mud. "Nicely done," Brennus congratulated Iridan. But his friend was paying him scant attention. Iridan's eyes were unfocused, likely lost in ether sight, Brennus guessed. Once they had risen above the heads of those in the crowd, the liquidy mass began to move. Unfortunately, it did not pull everyone along with it. Iridan began to walk, and the rest followed his example. The surface tugged at their feet slightly as they lifted them, and there was an echoing ripple of sound, similar to a drop of water falling into a full bucket with each step. The sound of 16 pairs of feet made for an odd symphony as they walked. Fortunately, the honor guard had been assigned to the Tower of Contemplation for long enough that unannounced bits of magic were merely unusual rather than shocking. Iridan had not lifted their conveyance much more than head height, and hands reached up from the crowd to touch the magical walking water as it passed above. Magic was quite far from unknown in the Cadran Empire, but most often it was done out of sight of the common folk. It was a rare treat to see such a display, and diverted much of the crowd's immediate attention from gossip to wonderment. In the meantime, Brennus, Iridan, and the rest of Brennus's escort made haste for Kallax Square, where they would find the headquarters of the Imperial Army. A few paces into their mid-air journey, Iridan shook his head, clearing his sight back to normal vision and reorienting himself as he walked. "Thank you, I quite like this one," Iridan said,
belatedly accepting Brennus's compliment. So, Iridan, Brennus began, I guess this means we are cousins. I will need to see a family tree at some point, I suppose, but I think we are 4 generations or so apart from being cousins. I cannot rightly say what we are. For all I know, I could be your thrice great uncle, despite being just a month older, Iridan replied. It seemed to Brennus that he had already given the topic some thought. Welcome to the family in any event. I imagine that you can move to the family estate if you would like. It seems rather clear that Rashan favors you, Brennus observed dryly. You might ask for any room you like. As soon as Brennus mentioned rooms at Solaran Estate, he thought of his own room. Then he thought of the dream. His stomach twisted inside him as the anxiety returned, worrying what was going on in that world he saw at night. Are you all right, Brennus? Iridan asked. You just got this look on your face like someone just told you that the beef stew you just ate was not actually made from beef. Iridan walked a pace ahead of Brennus and turned to look him in the face, head on. Really, are you well? A lot on my mind is all. The world changed a lot on us today, I feel. More so for you and me than for most, perhaps, but it changed for everyone. I think I know what it feels like now, when a pawn advances to the back rank. I'm not sure what piece I have become, but I am fairly certain I am a pawn no longer, Brennus said. Rook, I would say. You have a rookish quality to you, Iridan joked, and got Brennus to chuckle. Always go in a straight line once you get set on something. The gnawing worry was still with Brennus, but Iridan helped keep his mind off what he knew he could not control, at least until nightfall. Brennus was not sure who was in control in his dreams, whether he was just an observer or whether he was the one deciding what to do. A lot of what this Kairos fellow did seemed rather naive, but it was an endearing sort of naive that Brennus envied a little. Maybe in that world, he was just a more innocent version of himself. He hoped that the innocent self of his dreams was ready to face whatever was to come. That innocence would ill serve him if Brennus's second worst fears were realized. If Kairos had just died last night, all was moot anyway, and it seemed there would be no repercussions to Brennus. However, if Kairos had been captured, Brennus still did not know how their fates were twined, and the worst might still be yet to come. Brennus's thoughts, it seemed, could wander off without him, despite Iridan's best efforts.
What is all this?
Sir Harald Shadrisson demanded as Jurl opened up his message in the main entry hall and began to read it aloud to Sir Harald and anyone else within earshot. As Brennus's entourage entered the army headquarters, soldiers, functionaries, and officers had begun to congregate. As with much of the rest of Kadrus, they were privy to an unusual sight, and curiosity was the surest lure of men. This morning, the 73rd day of autumn, 6,279 summers since the founding, 3 members of the Imperial Inner Circle were executed for the crime of treason regarding the circumstances of the death of Emperor Darus Kadrin. These included High Sorcerer Gravis Arkhan, Maruk Solaran, and Stalia Gardarus. Those who may have been aware of their treasonous conspiracy are granted conditional clemency.
Insomuch as there will be no formal inquiry beyond what justice has already been meted out.
These circumstances have necessitated changes in leadership at the highest levels of the Empire. While there is no specific charge leveled against anyone in the Imperial Army, and no officer thereof shall be singled out for dishonor, at this time I must place loyalty and competence above seniority and the standard chain of promotion. Thus I hereby bestow upon Sir Brennus Solaran the title of Grand Marshal of the Kadrin Imperial Army, with full and complete authority over all men and materials of the army, and discretion to use them as he sees fit, subject solely to my discretion and oversight. Furthermore, all senior officers in the Imperial Army
are ordered to appear in the Great Hall of the Imperial Palace at sunset tonight to receive further details. All questions regarding the change of command may be held until that time. Under no circumstances will anyone interfere with the transition of command to Grand Marshal Sir Brannis Soloran or disobey his orders. Anyone who does so will answer directly to me. Signed, Warlock Rashan Soloran, High Sorcerer and Regent of the Kadrin Empire, Jurl finished, and walked calmly over to Sir Hurald and handed him the decree. There was a stunned silence in the hall. Many of the onlookers shifted uncomfortably, awaiting a reaction from Sir Hurald, who had listened less than stoically to Jurl's recitation of the decree. His pale, pasty skin had flushed a bright red where it was not covered by beard, and he was breathing heavily. It seemed all he could do as he listened, not to cross the few paces between himself and Jurl and run the sorcerer through.
"Preposterous," Sir Hurald thundered. "This is a coup. Take this lot prisoner immediately," he ordered to no one in particular, gesturing to Brannis and his entourage. "These are traitors to the Empire."
Hurald's hand went to the enchanted sword at his side, but instantly the honor guard's halberds leveled in his direction. Several officers moved to General Sir Hurald's side, though they were careful not to draw their own blades. While the honor guard was little tested in battle, they had a reputation for efficiency and obedience that left none to question whether they would die carrying out their orders to defend the usurper, regardless of what Sir Hurald might wish. Others had watched from the entrance hall or the walkways above that overlooked it, but there was no great haste to take sides. On the one hand, they were suspicious of these orders, having just heard about the deaths of three of the most influential members of the Inner Circle at the hands of the one who gave them. On the other, the military was quite fond of history and educated its officers well on the subject, especially Kadrin's rich and bloody history of conquest. Unlike the peasant folk outside, these men knew who Rashan Soloran was and wanted no part of defying him. Rumors had already spread that the old warlock was truly returned.
"What are you waiting for, men?"
Sir Hurald looked around the hall and up at those watching and waiting.
"Draw steel and subdue these intruders. Are you cowards?"
There was some element of truth to Sir Hurald's accusation. The honor guard was the least of the troubles they saw. Three sorcerers of the Imperial Circle were among the entourage, and many had heard second or third-hand accounts of Iridan entering combat in the Battle of Kelvi Forest. Sorcerers were always risky to fight, since when faced with death, they had no reason not to try to fight with ether. To the winds with consequences. Foremost, though, was that Brannis was known to carry massacre. None in the hall had noticed, or knew enough to even tell the difference, that he was carrying avalanche instead.
"There has indeed been a coup," Brannis replied. "It is over now. The usurper's killed. Rashan Soloran is regent of the Empire now. This is a fact."
"The Imperial Circle already recognizes him as such."
"He meets with the nobles even now to inform them. Your summons for this evening is your time to see for yourself. I have seen him already."
"You shall not take the army without a fight," Sir Hurald proclaimed. "I have served at the Emperor's command for nearly my entire life, and I will not allow some reckless pup to steer us into catastrophe. If none of you will draw steel to defend the fate of the army, then I will."
And Hurald drew his blade, a fine piece of both swordsmithing and ethersmithing. The blade shone like silver or seemed black as night, depending on the angle of the light. It was scribed down the length with runes, keeping it razor sharp and easily balanced in Hurald's hand. He presented it in the classic fencing salute.
"I challenge you, Brannis Soloran, to a duel."
He spoke formally, but intentionally left off the "sir" and any mention of rank. "Hold," Brannis spoke softly, raising his hand to forestall the impending halberd charge he felt was coming from the honor guards. He drew Avalanche from its sheath, slowly, and with a reversed grip, he took two steps closer to Sir Hurld as the honor guard parted slightly to allow a clear path between the two men. Still moving slowly, he raised his sword, blade still facing downward, until his arm was fully extended. With a sudden explosive thrust,
Brennus drove the sword halfway to the hilt into the solid granite floor of the entry hall.
Those nearby turned, threw up their hands or covered their faces to protect themselves from the stone debris that flew up every which way from the sundered floor. To his credit, Sir Hurld only flinched, never lowering his sword from guard position. "I could cut you in half," Brennus spoke, loudly enough for everyone in the now quiet hall to hear him clearly, despite being only a few paces from the old general he was addressing. "But that will not make me any more right. If you were to dodge my strike and run your sword through my heart, you would not prove your point either. Rashan Solaran is back. Yes, he is the very same warlock who destroyed Lorimar and ended the Necromancer Wars, and who survived the Battle of the Dead Earth, contrary to what we once thought. He had been gone just over a century, and he has much to explain about his whereabouts in the interim, and why he has not returned before now, that I will grant. This is no raw lust for power. He has all that he could want and more already. I know little of his tale, but I know this much. Warlock Rashan was able to survive the final battle with Lorimar because he had become an immortal, a demon. However powerful and dangerous history's record says he is more so now. Though I was not present to witness it, I have reliable accounts confirmed by the Inner Circle that Gravis Archon confessed his crimes and tried to rationalize his way around them. When Warlock Rashan chose to summarily destroy him, the former High Sorcerer was helpless to defend himself. Though you will doubtless hear much the same from him tonight, Warlock Rashan does not intend or wish to remain regent, or to style himself as the new Emperor. Having traveled back from Kelvi Forest with him, I feel I know him at least a small bit. I believe he was homesick and wished to return to the Emperor's service, as he once served so long ago. Upon his homecoming, he instead found a grand conspiracy that had been perpetrated in his absence. He is upset. He is angry. He does not yet know whom to trust among the circles of power in Kadrin. Thus he has instated me, his kin, and someone whom he has shared his travels with, as custodian of the army, at least for the time being. I know not if this promotion will last a week, a month, or become permanent. You, Sir Hurld, have not been demoted as such. The position of Grand Marshal may be above yours, but it has not been awarded in many summers. I expect you will continue to serve the Imperial Army and obey the orders given by me or by the Regent. If you have issue with this arrangement, and frankly you've made it sufficiently clear that you do, take it up with Warlock Rashan tonight when you meet him. Contrary to what you might think, he will not kill you for challenging his decision. He may even appreciate it. He finds our knights soft and passive, and you might do well to show otherwise. I will let you think on this. I have no intention of issuing sweeping orders to change the army wholesale. My one order for today is that you find me an office, which I will take residency in starting tomorrow. Brennus paused as if to consider something, then continued, "And please bear in mind that the warlock may visit this new office of mine. While I consider myself to be good-humored and reasonable, I find Warlock Rashan to be somewhat less so, and he might find it inappropriate if he has to meet with me in some converted pantry or one of the stables." Brennus pulled his sword from the ground as easily as if it had been stuck in snow and returned Avalanche to its sheath, locking his gaze on Sir Hurld as he did so.
"I may still ask to face you in combat over this, Brennus," Sir Hurld said,
more calmly than he had spoken earlier. Warily, he slid his own blade back into its sheath as well.
I will see you this evening, then. I shall be in attendance as well, as I am now a senior officer of the army, Brannis replied. Brannis turned and began to walk back toward the main doors, and the honor guard fell in behind him. As they exited army headquarters and the view of those inside, Iridan leaned in to Brannis and whispered,
Well played indeed. I thought for a moment you really were going to cut him in half in front of everyone.
Without turning, Brannis muttered back, So did I. I'm still surprised the arrogant mule put his sword away. Iridan suppressed a chuckle. Brannis parted ways with the honor guard and the two sorcerers at the gate to Solaran Estate. He needed some time away from the chaos that was quickly overtaking him, at least long enough to regroup and adjust to the sudden change in rank and importance. Iridan remained behind when the rest left.
Would you like me to show you around the place? I know my father did not like having you around, but that would seem not to be an issue anymore, Brannis said.
Despite their long-standing friendship, Maruk Solaran had never approved of Brannis associating so closely with a peasant sorcerer. Though his stance had softened somewhat as Iridan showed himself more and more capable as he advanced through the academy, Brannis's father had never allowed Iridan to feel at ease at the estate.
I would like to see the place a bit.
From the couple times you sneaked me in when we were younger, it seemed nearly as nice as the palace, Iridan replied. Not today, though. I think everyone should get some time to get used to me being Warlock Rashan's son, not the least of them being me. I woke up this morning as Iridan Corian. I think I shall try falling asleep as him tonight as well. By the by, you could use a good night's rest yourself. I know you've had an interesting day as I have, but you look the worse for it, Iridan said in that bluntly insulting manner that only close friends are wont to get away with on a regular basis. I slept poorly last night. I had a particularly vivid nightmare, and it has gnawed at me all day, despite the numerous distractions that you might think would take my mind off it entirely, Brannis confided. There was no one else around now, and he felt confident that Iridan knew him well enough not to read too much into it.
Must have been quite the nightmare.
Were you falling, perhaps, or trapped by some monster or another? I have never found the end of one of those falling ones. I think the mind does not quite know what the end is supposed to feel like. So you just wake up, Iridan said. No, I always see the same place in my dreams, the same people. I am always the same person in my dreams. Not Brannis the Knight, but some lowly scribe. Last night I was accosted by city guards after they caught me doing magic, which I think was illegal, possibly. Anyway, I got caught and knocked out. I do not know what happened from then on, Brannis said. He was not sure Iridan would understand, but at least he felt he could unburden himself somewhat in Iridan's presence.
Oh, Brannis, it still pains you, even though the academy was winters ago? You get to play at magic in your dreams and you get persecuted for it? That is just awful.
Quite a clear recollection of it as well. It must have made quite the impression on you. Iridan sounded empathetic, but Brannis knew he could not understand the frustration that those winters of failure and ultimately ridicule had caused him. Still, as thoughtful as Iridan's kind words were, they missed the mark.
Well, yes, but that is not the half of it. I remember it all, the whole thing, morning to night. And I do every night. I did not used to remember my dreams much at all, but I think possibly because they bored me so. Things have been going better of late in the dream world, what with learning a little magic and meeting this girl.
Aha, Iridan interrupted him. This whole dream thing is about the parts of your life you would like to change. You're still pining for Juliana, too, I would wager. You claimed you were past that, but you still carry on hoping, because technically no one called off your betrothal. It was just a given that once you left the academy that it was over. How many lasses have you betted to convince yourself you did not still want her? You are a general now.
Grand Marshal, Brannis corrected him quietly,
barely slowing Iridan's narrative momentum.
Yes, Grand Marshal now, and have the support of the new High Sorcerer. Surely you could just, follow through?
How could she refuse you? Iridan asked. Brannis could not help but admire how his friend was trying to help him out, ill-conceived though the attempt might have been.
It is not so much that. I just worry what has happened in my dream.
I do not want to lose everything I have there, Brannis said.
Brannis, it is just a dream. Dreams are all in your head. If you lose what you have there, maybe you can take my advice and seek it while you are awake.
Iridan smiled mischievously.
Is she pretty?
Brannis frowned in reply.
Do you have an appointment with a tailor you ought to be seeing this afternoon? Brannis said, diverting the conversation because Iridan was just having fun with him now.
See you tomorrow, Brannis.
Iridan turned and waved as he departed.
And get some real sleep tonight. The Empire will need you after all.
Brannis attended the officer's summons to the palace that night. Rashaan held audience in the throne room, but stood beside the empty throne the whole time. All officers stationed in Cadrus were in attendance, since the order had left off mention of what ranks were considered senior enough to attend. Rashaan made no comment on the size of the crowd. Brannis kept himself distracted by the audience, as he had heard the details of the conspiracy already, and knew more of the travels from Kelvi already than Rashaan had revealed to the rest of the officers. He could not stop his worries about Kyrus and his fate, now that he had time enough to let them run wild. He was half listening to Rashaan and was aware enough of the crowd's reaction to realize that the warlock was an inspiring speaker. It dawned on Brannis that these were Rashaan's people, much more so than the flabby old sorcerers that sat in ornate chairs in a tower and spent their days debating and delegating. These were men who would bear arms into battle and emerge bloody and victorious, or at least might have in their younger days in some cases. The warlock appealed to their sense of imperial pride and talked of the glories of the empire that were dying in the fields like overripe vegetables. He actually compared them to those vegetables, soft, worthless, and rotting inside. He offered them a new path back to what the empire used to be when he was last its warlock. The rousing speech noticeably lifted the morale of those present, though obviously some remained unconvinced. The one phrase that stood out to Brannis as an omen of the Empire's future was thus: I will reunite the Empire through diplomacy, and I am a diplomat of fire and steel. There was actually a book in the library at the School of Arms entitled The Diplomacy of Fire and Steel, which had been written after Rashaan's apparent death, describing his use of diplomacy and deception in the cause of war. It was said that the Emperor wielded the army in his left hand and the circle in his right, the two tools by which he controlled the Empire. Brannis wondered if he was about to become the blood-stained left hand of the regent. Sir Herald did not seek Warlock Rashaan's permission to challenge Brannis to a duel that night. Brannis did not expect to sleep the better for it.